It's week one of December to remember. Things are already moving swimmingly. Libido seems to be kicking in, inspired by the feminine. A dilemma in my plan to bank sperm. And an interview with Infinite Love Andy, a pretty, fun, and smart girl who may just be my muse. It's my unconventional life. Woo!
I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. To front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die discover that I had not lived.
My name is Nigel McGuinness and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it's kind of a personal ed. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2016. Sponsored by, you guessed it, no one right now. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2016? Time of year that just fills you with hope and excitement, I think. You know, maybe remembering those feelings from your childhood, the cold air on your face wrapped up warm, colours of changing leaves. It's enough to give you an erection. Or not, as the case may be. So, I have somewhat of a dilemma when it comes to my sperm banking plans. I got a letter saying there's been a voluntary recall of some of the meds that I've been prescribed to boost my sperm production, and it's up to me whether I want to use them now and go ahead, or I can send them back so they can make more and send me replacements, which could take at least 2 to 3 weeks. And I really wanted to get this sorted as part of my December to remember plan. And if I wait until the new year to even get started, well, I don't know. A lot of moving parts. The other moving part of my December to remember, of course, involves dating. I started the Style Life Challenge, which is a way to develop the social skills to be able to talk to and get a date with any girl you like. If she's single. And interested, of course. Day one's challenge is to start a conversation with any 5 random strangers, which sounds a lot easier than it really is. I went to my local coffee shop and everyone was talking to their friends or reading or invested in their phones, and no one seemed open to talking to strangers. In the end, ironically enough, a couple of people actually started talking to me about the book that I was reading. So I know deep down, it's not that people don't want to talk to anyone. I think it's that they just don't want to get stuck talking to someone boring. Or if you're a cute girl, get hit on. Badly. It's really how you feel about it. I mean, if you're comfortable, confident, have something to say, smile, and aren't aggressive, I think people love to talk to strangers. I do. I think, like with everything in life, you just have to view it as making a positive impact in the world. I mean, who doesn't need to smile? There's been a little more noise on the dating apps too. Nothing crazy, but some potential leads, potential positive experiences. I get the sense that, like most things in life, they come in waves and you attract back from the universe what you put into it. And things picked up on the physical front before the month even began. And herein I have somewhat of another dilemma. How open can I be, should I be, and in what detail about my dating life? I mean, on the one hand, there is a definite need to protect people's privacy. But on the other, I want to be able to give full disclosure when it comes to my life. I mean, that's the whole point of doing this, I think. To be able to live a completely open life, built from only positivity, without restraint or apology, not hiding anything with shame. I mean, shouldn't we all want to live a life that, when open to the cold, hard light of day, can be seen as positive, kind, and authentic? Now, I don't think I have to say everything to do that necessarily, because like I said, you know, I want to respect people's privacy. But I will do my best, with consent, of course, as always, to speak openly and hopefully entertainingly about my love life. And sometimes, the entertainment comes in what you don't say. But having said that, yes, I kissed a girl, and I liked it. And you get to listen to her on this week's podcast. Beyond the simple fact of that, however, I think that being non-monogamous, intelligent, and kind, she could be a total muse and inspiration for me to really live the life I've said that I wanted. Had a plenty of fish date too, that was fun and entertaining, and left me driving home with a big smile on my face. As I'm saying this, it does bring up an interesting notion though, because anyone who's interested in dating me and listens to this podcast will have a complete open book on me. And maybe that, in and of itself, may ruin the mystery of those early dating days. Can't decide. I'll ask people. Well, what do you think? Let me know. Also, I had this idea to start an advice portion of this show where I answer people's questions about love and sex. Might call it Totally Unqualified Advice with Nigel McGuinness. So write in. Could be fun. And if someone has music for it, send me that too. As I said, this week's interview is with Andy, a girl who opened up her 5-year monogamous relationship a little over a year ago, who I originally met at one of the Infinite Love pool parties and discussion groups that I went to. Now, they sound way more salacious than they really are. In actuality, they're totally non-sexual affairs with wonderful, kind and intelligent people that you quickly feel comfortable around, who see the world in a lot of the same ways that you do. I've been so encouraged by all the people I've met in these non-traditional relationship meetup groups who don't subscribe to society's norms but still want to have deep, meaningful and positive relationships in the world. And Andy is definitely in that category. As much, however, she was also one of a smaller number of people I'd met in the non-traditional community that I felt an attraction to and a connection with. Now, the interview was recorded outside in a park, so sorry if there is background noise sometimes, but I wanted to try it out and see how it works. I think it's a great interview nonetheless, and I commend her for wanting to be so open and authentic in what she said. And it has nothing to do with her asking to kiss me afterwards. At all. Seriously. It was just a bonus. Thou dost protest too much. Anyway, as usual, we had a ton of conversation after we'd finished recording, so I think maybe we'll have to record another one sometime. For now, here's part one. Infinite Love, Andy. Well, this is probably going to be the most picturesque of podcasts that I've ever recorded so far, which probably doesn't help given the fact you can only hear, but you might also be able to hear the wonderful birds, a little bit of a breeze coming through the trees, there's a tennis game going on, and I think that's LA's finest, is it? Hope they're not searching for me. Anyway, we're out here in Griffith Park with the wonderful Andy, who has taken the time today to talk us a little bit about her experience in the world of non-monogamy. How are you, my dear?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Fantastic. Now, I met you originally at one of those wonderful poly discussion groups.
Yes.
In the Infinite Love group on Facebook.
Yes.
And was really impressed with you. I mean, I have to be honest, a lot of people I've met in the non-monogamous world have really impressed me, but every now and again someone just sort of stands out, and you always stood out to me, and I thought, great, I'd certainly love to meet you again and talk to you a little bit more, somewhat in public, because this is going to be going out there. So give us a little bit of your backstory in terms of being non-monogamous. And I never use the label polyamorous because for me it seems divisive, and I don't really know if it works, because I'm certainly open to being with just one person,
right?
And just as long as it works.
It's kind of interesting, when my partner and I opened, we were very particular about using non-monogamy versus polyamory, because we were we wanted to be super careful that it was only physical connections that we were looking for outside of our own relationship. And to us, polyamory meant there would be emotional connections. We've actually since sort of gotten a little looser about our language and about the agreements that we have with each other.
Right. So start off then. So originally, you have children. You were married before?
I was married at 19 for 10 years. I had two children in that marriage. And then I divorced at 30. And 28 days later, I remarried.
There's a movie about 28 days later. I hope it's not...
No, that lasted 4 years, and then I've been with my current partner for 5 years now.
Okay, so married twice and current partner 5 years. Mm-hmm. Now, your marriages were all traditional, monogamous. Yes. There was never any discussion of opening those up.
No.
Nor would they have been interested if they had, correct?
Correct.
Right. So then with your current partner, how did this whole notion of opening up come into being?
It started as sex talk. During our physical interactions, would talk about adding a person. And I, on Words with Friends, I started chatting with people, and there was a person who was interested in me, and I was interested in him. So I asked my partner if our sex talk was only talk, or if he meant it, and if it would be possible. And he said, why not?
Okay.
So we added in a man, and that was our first experience.
And when was that?
That was June last year, so 2015.
Okay. And you said you met this other guy how?
On the Words with Friends app. It's a Scrabble game.
on
the phone.
I love it. How did you meet your third partner? Playing Scrabble.
Yeah, there's a community match thing that I don't know if a lot of people use to hook up, but it certainly, I found a lot of men were very flirtatious.
Right. Is your picture on that app?
Yes.
Of course, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be, but it is.
Yeah, so. I see. So Scrabble playing guys.
It's like Tinder. Like you can swipe to see who you want to play a game with.
Wow.
It's Tinder for people who can spell.
I love it. I got to get on that.
Yeah.
Can't do any worse than I've been doing so far.
There you go.
Fantastic. So, okay. So that was your first sort of foray.
Yeah.
And great hats off to your current partner for being so open-minded about it. Because oftentimes, you know, it's the guy that really has the problem with his partner, certainly within traditional heterosexual relationships, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But they do say that for the most successful opening up situations, it's usually better if the girl is the first one to actually take that step away, because oftentimes she's the one who's more jealous.
Oh.
Yeah.
But
having said that, at least for most of the people I've talked to in the poly community, it's often easier for the female.
Yes.
Right?
I would say so.
I mean, how has he been doing in terms of seeing other people?
He's had a few dates, but he's not had the success, I think. And I don't know if I want to call it success, but he hasn't been able to connect with as many people.
Right.
It's a lot more difficult for him to even get women to respond to him on dating apps, because the women are so inundated with messages. It's just a lot harder for him to get through.
Yep.
If he's in a room with someone, he can definitely connect, but it's just getting in the room.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's a problem for everybody, for sure. You know, the world over in terms of meeting and connecting with people. I mean, they haven't figured it out yet. They haven't got the perfect dating app. They haven't got the perfect social situation. That's why, you know, we're all kind of still struggling. And arguably, people hang on to relationships a lot more strongly than they should do, because they're so deathly afraid of being single again, right?
Right.
And again, maybe that's an argument for non-monogamy, in the sense that you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and just because portions of your relationship aren't working, you don't have to end it completely.
Yes.
So it wasn't a case with you guys then that you felt like the sexual portion of your relationship.
No.
No, that was going perfectly fine.
It was good.
But it was
and
just...
it made it even better.
Right.
I mean, it's not actually the same now, but at the time when we started, it just spiced things up a lot.
Right. Yeah. And it was... It wasn't like a triad where everybody was involved, right? It was just you were the middle person. You were seeing your partner and the other guy as well, right?
No. It was a threesome the first time we were together.
Wow. How was that?
Really good. but also, like, very busy. it was hard to keep track of everything that was happening. But it was good. But that happened twice with him. But that was all. You know, after that, we sort of...
Oh, you just went back to just being with your current partner?
Yes. And then I found there was someone who sometimes works where I work. Mm-hmm. So I asked my partner if I could give him my phone number, and he said yes. And we knew that that would be a me going off on my own.
Right.
A different situation. And yeah, so then we did that, and that was our next step.
When was that?
That was probably August of 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Successful?
Yeah, really good sex.
Positive?
Yeah.
Oh, look at you. You are an inspiration to us all.
It was. And then, you know, that lasted a few times on my lunch hour. Oh, yeah, that was nice. And then... And then it was kind of done. He wanted to go without protection, and I didn't want to, so we stopped that.
Yeah.
So that was fine. You know, I still see him occasionally, and we have our pleasantries, and that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you started out, like you said, it was supposed to be a physical opening up, but not an emotional opening up. You wanted to remain...
Right.
Primary partners, I guess is the term, with your current partner. But has that changed over the 18 months?
It has. It changed with one particular person that I'm still seeing, sort of. He's bi-coastal and is currently in New York. And he was our first experience with me having a connection other than physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was open with my partner about it. And that was hard for him to work through. But it wasn't like he tried to shut it down. But it took a lot of conversations and honesty and openness about my feelings for the new person in New York and what did that mean for us. And it's a little harder because he hasn't experienced it yet.
Yeah.
For him to understand that, you know, having feelings, and it's not even like love, it's just having fondness and caring about someone else doesn't mean I would care about him less.
Mm.
But of course, that's hard. It's hard to watch that happen from the other side.
Well, I think a big part of it really is a fear of rejection, is the sense that, okay, if you're developing a feeling for someone else, it's not whether that you'll feel less for the current person you're with, but that you may stop feeling enough to want to be with them and actually want to be with the other person completely.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right.
Right.
That's what it came to,
Yeah. But he trusted you enough. And it really is, I don't even know if it is about trust. And here I am talking like an authority about polyamory, and I'm not even monoamorous at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, but the truth is, I think that really, ultimately, it's about letting go of the outcome and saying that if someone has this desire and they meet someone else and they form a relationship and they truly want to be with that person and not with me anymore, as painful as that is, and it's easy for me to say now, not being in the situation, but nonetheless, as painful as it is to say, if you love someone, you say, go, be free, pursue your heart.
That's about letting go of the control that comes with most relationships, most traditional relationships. It's a slight part control that you have to let go of.
Right. Well, I have to say, I think your partner sounds absolutely wonderful.
He is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you want to transition to where we are now, but...
Sure.
But right now, our physical part of our relationship is sort of stalled. And I don't know that I can really say why. I'm still trying to analyze that. And it's from me, you know, I've asked him if we could just... you know, be parents and be best friends and not have an obligatory sexual relationship currently.
Well, do you have kids together?
Not together.
Right.
But my kids are with me. One of my kids lives with us all the time and the other 50% of the time.
Gotcha.
And there is no one I'd rather partner with to raise them. And I've done it with their own father and I've done it with a stepfather.
Yeah.
But my current partner is the only one that I would ever want to have their actual father figure. I know they still have a dad in their life, but but they look up to my partner right now. And it's just amazing to watch. So there's still that. And we had to have the conversation of, I don't want to feel like I have to have sex with you to keep things even. And it got to that point. but I still want to be with you, and I still love you. You're my best friend. You know,
it happens a lot.
Yeah,
it happens a lot. So really, then the lack of interest really it was on your part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that time and time again, and oftentimes it comes with having kids. After you've had kids, for whatever reason, that biological clock turns off, or that desire is no longer there, and it kind of makes sense from an evolutionary perspective because now your priorities should be raising these kids, not making more kids. Right. But when this sort of situation arises, then arguably it's just because this is how our body is hardwired, that once you've been with somebody for a certain amount of time, generally 3 to 5 years, your hormones will go through a cycle to where you stop being attracted to that person.
Yeah.
And when that happens, what happens normally with a traditional monogamous relationship, of course, is that you're kind of stuck because you're all in.
Right.
Whereas hopefully in your situation, and perhaps in others, as people will become more accustomed to this being an option, you can maintain other portions of the relationship. I think that's fantastic. And again, he's been so open, clearly, about other aspects of your relationship that hopefully he'll be able to do the same. And I think it would certainly help, obviously, if he was able to find somebody else that, you know, would suffice in that aspect of his desires, right?
Yeah, and, you know, it's not to say that it won't come back. I think we're in a cycle right now. And I'm hopeful that it will, but I'm honest enough with him to let him know when this isn't, you know, that it would just be out of obligation.
Yeah, and that's super important. I'm a member of Sex Positive Los Angeles. I just went to an orientation recently again for the second time, and they talk about consent and boundaries and not doing things out of obligations, even to the extent of hugging someone, saying, hey, are you in the mood for a hug? And if you're not in the mood for a hug, saying no. And thank you very much, you know, for respecting your boundaries. And that's great. And I think certainly when it comes to sex, that's super important because it can really mess with somebody's head. I was just, not necessarily related, there's a documentary on Netflix right now called Pervert Park. And I just started watching it. And it's about this trailer park in Florida, which is set up for convicted sex offenders as they're transitioning from jail back out into the real world. And I've only really watched the first 10 or 15 minutes of it, but every single one of them was sexually abused in their own childhood. And we see this time and time again. And we vilify people who are pedophiles or whatever else, and there's certainly no justification for what they do. But bottom line is, you know, something terrible happened to them to make them the way they are. And again, that's why it comes back to how it's super important to respect your own boundaries and not do things within the sexual world that you don't feel comfortable doing. Agree?
Yes.
Good. We're on the same page. I need to go in the opposite direction. I need to start doing more things in the sexual world. I have way too many caveats. I find that's the problem. Now, you've listened to a few of these podcasts, right? All of them.
Weird. I'm like a little podcast stalker.
That's great. No. Give me broad strokes. Am I pathetic? Because a few people...
No, you want me to do this. Okay. Are you pathetic? No, of course not. I think you're too much in your head, but I think you know this, which even puts you more into your head.
Right.
Maybe. I know you have reasons for being reserved and risk averse, as you say. I don't know. If you can let some things go, then I think you'd find plenty of people who are quality who would be right there.
Yeah.
Ready. Yeah. But, you know, that's just speaking to the dating part, I think. The parenting partner part. I love that you've identified what you want, and I hope that you can find it. I can see how it's hard to find a woman who has that, like you say, as her plan A. And but I don't think it's impossible. It's a huge world.
Right. And, it's like anything, isn't it? It's finding people that see the world the same way that you do, whether it's as a parent or as a lover or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Maybe this is a difficult question to answer, but if you'd never had kids, do you feel like you would have entertained the thought of doing it as a parenting partner? Or you think you still would have held on to traditional ideal?
It's hard to say. I know that when I was in college, the first time, I didn't want kids at all. Like, I knew I didn't. I figured I'd ruin them. But
why was that?
I just figured I wouldn't do a good job and I wanted to be the businesswoman. I wanted, you know, right. a lot of things.
But was there something from your childhood? Because oftentimes when people say they don't want kids, when they dig deeper, it's usually a sense of they feel like their parents didn't do a good job raising them, and they are fearful they will do the same thing with their own kids.
Probably at the time, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, but looking at it as an adult, I see now. I mean, at 19, of course your parents didn't do a great job. You're 19. You don't think anything they did was okay. But now, yeah? No, I know they did a decent job, at least.
Did the best they could.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And I think because I'm open to things like polyamory, I think, sure, it would have been something I would have at least entertained. I would have listened to. Yeah.
Right.
Because you get to a certain point as a woman and you, or as anyone.
Yeah.
And you feel that clock. You think, well, maybe I do want to pass something on to the next generation.
It's just life experiences, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even given the fact that you didn't necessarily want to have kids when you were 19 years old, when you did, it was still a miraculous thing,
of course,
right?
Of course, yeah. And of course, I wouldn't undo it.
Right.
I wouldn't take away the 10 years with the pastor for it. I would do it all again.
Yeah. And if I don't get to experience something, I truly do think I will be missing out on something wonderful. But
do you know so many people do, and not by their choice? So many people who can't.
Yeah.
It happens. It just does. You might have to reconcile yourself to it.
Right. Yeah. But I shouldn't reconcile myself with never having sex again, right?
No, you shouldn't. As a matter of fact, what are you doing in a half an hour?
Right. Well, it'll be the second time for Griffith Park for you, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Wow.
I mean, and that's at 40.
Yeah.
I am sort of making up for time, you know.
Yeah, again, you are an inspiration to us all.
Yeah. But car, sex, and Griffith Park.
I've never really been much of a sort of car, sex, outdoorsy sex sort of person.
It's not that great. I mean, it's good, but like it's messy and...
It's the spontaneity of it.
Oh, really?
Right?
That doesn't do it for you?
It doesn't offset the awkwardness and the fear of getting caught and or arrested.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I don't want to have some old lady who's out for a stroll, you know, see my, you know, white butt ruin a day, you know?
Maybe you would make her day.
Yeah,
you should be spreading the love.
I guess so. But no, for me, I've always been more of a sort of indoorsy sort of guy.
Okay.
They did a poll in one of those women's magazines, and they asked 100 guys and 100 girls, put yourself in this situation. You've been dating this person for about 3 or 4 weeks, and you've slept with them a couple of times. For whatever reason, you're going out for a restaurant, you have a nice meal, couple of glasses of wine, you're walking back home. And you live close enough to where you can walk. And as you're walking back home, you're walking through a parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, libido takes over and you start making out. And the guy bends the girl over, lifts the skirt up, and starts fucking her from behind.
That's
right?
Hot. Yeah.
In the garage.
Okay.
Now, at this point, there are two options, okay? And no argument, these are the only two options that are possible. Number one, he finishes there. And then when they go back to the apartment, he can't do it again. Therefore, they have to wait till the next day. Or they stop before he finishes so that they can go back to the apartment and sort of enjoy it in an extended version. They asked 100 guys what they thought the girls would say. And they asked 100 girls what they would prefer. Have a guess what the answers were.
Finish
and what would
there,
your be answer?
To finish there.
That would be your answer?
I would think that's what they'd say. I haven't thought through as to whether I'd want it or not. And this is why, because then the girl can go home and do other things.
Right, on her own, with the guy watching or...
No, I don't even mean sexual. Like, she can do the laundry. Done, check. Got it done. He's happy, she's happy. She can watch a movie. No.
I love it. It's great.
What did they say? What was the answer?
So the majority of guys said, oh, I'd want to stop it so I could go back and give her 17 orgasms or whatever else.
Okay.
And the majority of girls said, no, I'd want to be in the moment and yeah. just be authentic and genuine.
Yeah.
And that, I think, speaks volumes about the notions of what our expectations are sexually. For a guy, if you don't get a girl off at least twice, you're a failure.
Really?
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
And there are obviously exceptions to that rule. There are plenty of guys that just get drunk and hop on and, you know, what do they call it? Two pumps and a wiggle? but I think they are the exception to the rule. Most conscionable males are obsessed. I am obsessed with making sure that it's pleasurable for the girl way more than it's pleasurable for me. And I think that, to a certain extent, offsets living authentically and being in the moment. And I've always had an issue with that. And that's arguably why I haven't had a lot of these sort of experiences, you know, that sometimes I just need to let go. I don't know. I went to one of those play parties and it didn't seem like it was for me, really, you know?
You know, back to the scenario in the garage.
Hmm.
Don't discount that the guy wanting to take her and, well, take her in a consensual way and finish. That really boosts a woman's self-esteem to know that he wants her so bad and he can't stop himself. That's almost as exciting as coming three times or whatever.
Well, let me stop you there, because I just read a very interesting book by David Daylor called The Way of the Superior Man.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, he says that you as a man, as a superior lover, should refrain from ejaculation as much as possible. If you're having sex every day, you should probably only ejaculate maybe twice a week. And that even if the girl says, hey, I want you to come now, whatever she says, deep down she doesn't mean it. She may not know that she doesn't mean it, but if you are so easy that you will surrender and give out your energy like that, and subconsciously she thinks you're going to surrender to the world and you're not going to be the alpha male that she really needs that turns her on.
Well, I don't know about, like, waiting 3 days before you do, 3 days of sexual activity before you do. But, yeah, of course, it's kind of, I've been with men that come very quickly and some that I think are never going to come. And, sure, there's a lot more to enjoy with the other. I don't know that I've ever gone so far as to think that they would then be more successful or less easier overtaken in the world.
It's
but that's
always
an interesting
subconscious
theory.
Thing,
yeah, of course. But
right.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and think about those situations in that
light. Yeah. Hmm. When it just occurred to me now.
Yeah.
When you had your threesome with the two guys.
Which, the first time, yeah.
The first time.
Because we've had more than one.
Was that ever an issue? Because I went to university with a very good friend who was gay. And would always tell me, and it never occurred to me before he told me, that in the gay world, there was often a situation where he'd be with a guy, and either he or the other guy would get off much quicker.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
the other guy was sat there with like a little, you know, limp father of thousands, waiting for this other guy to get off, just feeling like, oh God, this is weird and awkward, and I don't really want to be here.
No, it wasn't actually an issue. They came relatively close to the same time.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was good. And that, I mean, they were just both similar in that aspect.
Right.
I got lucky, I guess. It would be awkward, I think.
You got lucky in many ways. Wow. And so, has it generally been two guys and you in terms of that?
We've done both.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been with a couple, and it didn't have, my partner wasn't involved in that either.
Right.
So,
God, you're amazing.
It's been a busy year and a half.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, but not always smooth sailing. We've had issues. We've
right.
had patches, but our communication level is just really strong.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Right, I get it, for sure, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
It's just funny, I'm hearing all these stories now, and there's such a strong sense of, I don't even know if it's jealousy. It's just a sense of like, I feel like I'm 8 years old and I'm talking to, you know, sort of an adult who's actually lived their life. And what have I done with my life? And it's not like I've never had sex,
yeah,
of course.
I don't have a podcast.
Right.
So, you know, you give up one, get the other.
You saying I've got to give up the podcast to get laid?
No, I'm not saying that. No, I'm sorry.
What are you saying?
No, you even just from as a listener,
yeah,
you put a lot of energy into this.
I
think this is a priority over your dating life. It seems
yeah.
so.
Well, listen, I'm going to England, and when I come back, it's actually on the top of my priorities because I've finished my editing gig now, mm-hmm. and I can focus more on it, and I'm going to do my best to get out there and to work on approaching people and, you know, developing rapport and all this sort of stuff that Good. Oftentimes as a girl you don't necessarily need to worry about, right? Certainly as an attractive girl, you've really got a, what are those things called, a conveyor belt of, yeah. you know, guys yeah, coming by and you can go, yeah. no, maybe, not for me, and keep going, right?
Yeah.
As a guy, you're on that conveyor belt.
Yes, right. Right.
So you've got to try and make yourself look as attractive and appealing as you possibly can. Right?
Yes. You've got that down though. You're fine.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh.
You're fine.
So
good. I mean, I approached you.
Did you?
I did.
No.
You were sitting in that chair and I approached you because I wanted to talk to you because you're cute.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure you'll have women. You just got to get out there.
Right. Go to more of those sort of parties. And the truth is, you know, I was away so much. You know,
right.
Away at the weekends, so I missed most of those parties. And then I was working nights, and so I couldn't go to a lot of the events.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like one of those things that once you get starting, it'll just start.
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll start going.
I'm not worried about you. I think you'll be fine.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you'll get out there, and you
great.
Like you said, you have your wingman who right that you live with now.
Yeah, I got yeah. me wing, and yeah, but I think it really does come back to confidence as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because right now I'm going, oh God, every time I meet someone, there seems to be so much pressure on that because if it doesn't work out, then I'm right back to square one again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I do have, you know, friends. I hate using the term friends with benefits because it somehow negates what is a very deep, meaningful relationship to me. But there are girls that I have been intimate with in the past that I could be intimate with again, but they don't live, you know, in the same zip code or even in the same state or in some senses the same country,
mm.
you know. So I need to, I think, just...
just need to get some locals.
Yeah, expand my net.
Yeah.
Cast my net further.
Further but closer.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
So you can get some.
Right.
Like whenever you want.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But I can still withhold ejaculation.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And now I'm good to go as well because I just got all my STI tests done.
Good.
At the LGBT Center.
That's where I go too.
Is it?
Yes.
Did you do all of the tests?
Well, I don't. Are you talking about the swabs? Yes, I did both swabs. Actually, I spilled most of the liquid out of the tube and I had to check with him. It was very embarrassing, but not that embarrassing. Definitely got to do it. But
maybe you're the reason why she told me to make sure that I put the cap back on tightly.
Oh, maybe. I opened it forgetting there was liquid in and it just popped
out. Oh, right. Okay.
Yes, both swabs. That was a new one for me.
I know.
Yeah.
She hands me the swab and she goes, so we just insert a couple of inches
yeah.
into your anus. And I was like, excuse me? Don't you do that?
Oh. Nope. You had to do it yourself there.
Oh, it took me a few days to wash that sort of self-shame off of myself.
So,
no,
okay.
So anyway, so it's all good and not that I had any reason to worry anyway, but
yeah.
Let me ask you that. You mentioned being with a few people.
Mm-hmm.
How did you have that discussion?
Oh, right up front. Sometimes in a first telephone conversation, if I've met them on a dating app, you know, I just bring it up and ask them, do they get tested? How often have they ever had anything? Have they ever had any reason to worry?
Right.
And I'm straight up with them as well.
So has there ever been a situation where someone said something that was a deal breaker?
Not from me initiating a conversation. Actually, the weird thing is last week, two men from the same dating app, one was an initial message saying, I'm very interested in you, but you need to know I'm HSV2 positive and
genital herpes.
And is that okay?
Right.
Or, you know, I think a lot of times if they lead with that, they're hoping you'll say, I have it too.
Gotcha.
Another one was from a man I'd been texting with from there, and he had been on and off, sort of absent and then back, and explained that the reason why was he was interested, but he had HSV2 as well. And I took that one to my partner, and we discussed it, and I decided it wasn't for me. I wasn't connected with the man enough to give it a try, but I wasn't opposed if that connection had been stronger. So, you know, he had never passed it on, according to him.
Yeah.
And honestly, to have someone bring it up seems almost more honest than the person who says, I've never had anything. What if they don't know? I mean, I may have been with someone who has it and
didn't
know.
Absolutely.
So my chances are probably equal whether they say they have it or they say they don't.
Yeah. I did the math. You have a 0.5% chance of getting genital herpes from anybody you're with, even if you use protection.
Right.
Which is, I mean, 0.5% seems very small. But if I said to you, you've got a 1 in 200 chance of dying from eating certain food, you'd probably not eat it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, actually, kind of, I got off the dating site the end of last week. I don't know if that had something to do with it, because it kind of made me see, I really don't know enough to be as casual as I've been.
Yeah.
And maybe I will go back and not be quite so scared, but I think I sort of had a wake-up call for a second and realized that I have a few people in my life right now that are really fine.
So, I mean, how many lovers, how many people are you seeing right now?
Well, the one who's sort of long distance right now in New York, he'll come back in January. And then there's someone who's local that I think there's some potential to be a little bit more long-term. He's being very cautious because he's not been in this situation before, but he's in a place in his life that he doesn't want a full-time girlfriend. He doesn't want to be the only emotional attachment someone could have.
Right.
So I'm sort of perfect for him right now. And then I have someone else who actually is in New York but is out here every couple of weeks for work that I've only seen once, but it was a really good, strong connection. So we'll see.
And that sort of feels like a happy number.
That's a happy number. And then, you know, I have my home and whatever comes back for that.
What do you mean?
Sexually, you know, at my partner.
And your long term.
Yeah. I really don't see it being like this forever.
No?
No. It'll get back.
Well, I truthfully believe that if he is with somebody else as well, then that will inspire it within you as well.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I bet it will.
Yeah.
I need to see him wanted by someone else, too.
Yeah. There's nothing worse for a girl's libido than a guy who's not having sex with anybody.
That is so good.
Right.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know. I gotta stop telling people, right? It's the worst. It's the worst. It's funny, Rye, who's the polyamory consultant that I met a number of times and had him on here as well, he says that even if you are not having sex with somebody else, you should always tell girls that you are.
Right.
Because A, it's just, it builds rapport and they trust you more because of it, which is ironic because you're not being honest. But B, it's just by putting it out there, it makes you more appealing as an alpha male.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm having sex with lots of girls.
Yeah. God, you just, oof, like, I
I've
can smell it on you.
I've got to go and have some sex.
sex you could have washed
six,
up.
Sex at eight. Yeah. Right.
All right.
So... yeah. I'm the worst. Oh dear. So let me ask you this about like being a parent and having listened to all of the podcasts so far, you do think that I'm going in the right direction, or do you think that I should perhaps, as a lot of my friends have told me, find someone who is non-monogamous and have somewhat of a relationship with them, a sexual relationship, and have kids as well?
I think you're making it too hard for yourself to say you have to be one or the other. I think maybe you should be open to both and see what happens. I think going down one road only, it's never going to be sexual, might be too limiting.
Yeah?
Yeah, but to say that you have to start out in a sexual relationship with a non-monogamous person to get there is also limiting.
Right. I've got to be more open, I know. One of my prospective parenting partners, well, both of my major prospective parenting partners are very attractive.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I really should have tried to have sex with them.
Yeah, probably.
But I didn't, and I don't know why, really.
I think you're afraid of it. I mean, from the sounds of it from here.
Afraid of what?
Afraid of starting that and then...
It not working out.
Yeah, right. Because it is pretty rare for you to be able to stop a sexual relationship and continue on...
Right.
...as a parenting partner or as a friend. I mean, it's hard. It happens. Yeah. Especially in the polyamory community, but...
But, of course, I think the irony is that it's easier to get into a parenting partnership relationship when you are having sex with somebody because of the masking power of oxytocin.
Yes.
Of hiding the fact that maybe you aren't a perfect partner for this person, but, Christ, when you feel that good being with somebody, then it makes you think you'd be great parents together. Right.
Right? That's a good point. Yeah.
So, right. Do you hear that? You probably didn't pick that up on the podcast, but actually looked down at my crotch at that point and said, did you hear that? Get ready. Once I get back from England, the gloves are coming off, the condom is going on, for a while at least.
And then off again.
And then it's off again. Ovaries, here we come. Sounds like a good song, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Country and Western.
Yeah.
Ovaries, here we come. No. All right, my dear. Well, this has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Any closing thoughts? Any words of wisdom?
What's your name again? No words of wisdom. No. Don't make me listen to my own voice on your podcast. I might have to skip this one.
Okay, no worries. Well, either way, thank you again for sharing everything.
Sure.
And let's go and get a coffee now.
Let's do it.
Wonderful.
Or sex.
All right. Sex and coffee. Fantastic. With a condom.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Dom. So there you have it. Like I said, we talked about so much more stuff after we stopped recording. About how she seems to get bored after a couple of times of sleeping with a guy. And how she often tells them beforehand that, look, this is just a short-term sexual thing, and they say, wow, they're really glad that she's so honest and open. But inevitably, most of the time afterwards, when she stops wanting to sleep with them, they say, well, what did I do wrong? She said that first-time sex is always really good because of the novelty, or first-time sex energy, as she put it, but oftentimes that it gets worse from there. Which puts me in somewhat of another dilemma. You see, she said, whether she was being honest or not, that she'd totally be up for a threesome if I found a girl. But given the prior assertion, aren't I throwing away such a wonderful opportunity, a gift from the gods, if you will, by having a twosome? The agony of choice. But let's be honest, I'm still trying to find my place in the world sexually. I think I'm getting there. I know casual sex isn't for me. You know, I love connection, trust, intimacy. I just think you can have all those things without necessarily a lifelong monogamous relationship. She also told me how it was through listening to this podcast, specifically discussions about having sex out of obligation, sometimes with an otherwise wonderfully compatible partner, that made her stop doing that with her current partner. It made me feel kind of bad that I'd unwittingly cock-blocked him, however many times that was the case. But in all seriousness, it's better for the long term, if she wasn't into it. And I think it could come back too, certainly if he is able to see other people. I've got to say, he sounds like an absolutely fantastic guy. And I think they're both really lucky to have each other in their lives. We got coffee at Priscilla's afterwards, and I gotta say how inspiring it was to be around someone so openly sexual and comfortably so, you know, without doing it for effect. Having conversations about sex, in general terms, outside of flirtation, I think could really inspire my libido. It was great. We talked about sperm management, ugly fuck faces, noise during sex, and I definitely felt a little turned on. And then after, when we hugged goodbye, she matter-of-factly said, "So, do you want to kiss me?" Why not? And I got to be honest, given the blatancy of our prior discussions, it was one of the most tender, gentle, and passionate kisses I can remember. Wonderful. Next week's interview is with my ugly sister. I have to say that because she tormented me as a child. I used to spend my pocket money buying her Duran Duran merchandise, and she totally blew off any plans to hang out with me at the last minute to hang out with her stupid friends. And, of course, she created my lifelong neurotic phobia of farting by constantly farting around me as a child. Disgusting. But she's seen the error of her ways, and now is doing her best to make it up to me. But she's still a little combative.
I've had a kid, but I'm going to leave him in France for a bit because I want to go wrestling.
Yeah, I think that would happen. I think if...
if you're listening, she's lying. She doesn't mean this at all.
I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. 1 week closer to 6 feet under. Thanks for listening and being part of the journey. Drop me a line if you think you or someone you know would be a good match for me as a parenting partner here in Los Angeles. Before you go, though, you know the deal. Please rate, write a review, and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Show some love. I'll be back next week, but if you want more before, then you can read my weekly blog at nigelwressing.com/blog, where you can also buy merchandise, book me, or just send me a nice message. Until then, wherever you are, whoever you're with, hope you find kindness and love. Be happy.